You're listening to a 9to5.cc podcast.
Hey everyone, just a quick reminder that if you're going to be making any purchases on Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, or Zazzle.com, please go to www.9to5.cc first and click the links in the sidebar or at the bottom of the page to support the site. It makes no difference to you, but it really helps us out a lot. Enjoy the show. Thanks.
Hey everyone, we're trying something a little new today. This is the first ever episode of the 9to5 Movie Club. The movie we watched and provided insightful commentary to is 1985's rap biopic, Crush Groove. I say biopic because it is sort of about the founding of Def Jam Records, but heavily fictionalized. The fact that this movie isn't a bigger deal honestly blows my mind. It has Run DMC basically playing themselves. It has Cool Keith. It has just a whole bunch of people. I don't even know if it has Cool Keith in it, guys. Not gonna lie. Anyhow, if you manage to track down this movie, feel free to do so before you listen to this podcast, so you'll have you'll kind of know what we're talking about. However, I feel like there's a lot of entertainment to be had just from listening to us talk about it. Remember to vote for us on Club Montreal's Best of Montreal list and buy stuff from us and whatever from Amazon and enjoy the show, guys. Crush Groove. Get ready.
Mic check.
One, two.
So this is the first ever episode of the 9to5 Movie Club, which we talked about a little bit on 9ES a little while ago, where we're just going to watch movies all together and then talk about them immediately
afterwards. Yo, man, it's time to get serious.
Serious fucking movie analysis.
That was the opening dialogue for the movie.
The opening dialogue
today.
For the movie that watches. Yo, it's time to get serious. And this is a serious podcast that is only going to be about serious films.
That's right. And I think somebody should mention how serious a film this is.
We watched the 1985 classic
Crush Groove.
Guys, seriously, it was moving.
I think my favorite thing that's happened today about Crush Groove was when we were like pressuring Sophie to make her run uphill from her house on a Sunday so that she could watch a movie about 1980s hip-hop.
Yeah.
Something that I'm sure Sophie has no desire to do. Hurry up, Sophie, come on.
I love you so much right now, Keith.
So,
my favorite part is how one of the opening scenes, this is one of the very first scenes of the film, Run DMC is standing on a stage doing a rap that starts with the words, "I want rock and roll," and with a big banner in the background saying, "Disco Fever."
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, what the fuck is going
they
on
They rap
here?
The song King of Rock at a rap. Yeah. Rap the song King of Rock at a disco club.
That's right.
I think the craziest part about this movie is right before the opening credits, the music that's playing is not rap. It's like this weird synthy bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, why is this
But it was
music?
The 80s, right, man. Everything
so this,
was synthy bullshit.
This story was basically the story of the formation of Def Jam Records, Russell Simmons.
Romanticized version of Def Jam Records. I cannot imagine.
Historical fiction.
Okay, hold on. Can you take it another level back for our listeners who maybe don't know what Def Jam Records is?
I did not until
right.
now.
You really should have, though.
Why?
Wow.
Because
you live in a bubble?
Not only that.
What?
I live in a bubble made of metal, Scott, and you know this.
Where was Slayer's first record released, Scott?
Fuck, I don't
know. It was
know
on Def Jam, Sophie.
No, it wasn't.
Absolutely.
Okay. Do you feel like you should rub my face in it now?
You just said I live in a bubble made of metal.
I do.
Okay, but a lot of people don't pay attention to who publishes.
Fair enough.
I fucking
records.
Don't.
I think this movie is a big reason why.
I think every single solitary record company should have this movie about it.
You know what I did know about this movie?
What?
The opening song was on Guitar Hero.
It's true.
I can't tell you what the name of King of Rock. There you go.
King of
that's
Rock.
That's what the name of the song
is. Which is a little bit weird that one of Run DMC's breakout songs was The King of Rock.
Yeah, I know. And then with Disco Fever in the background, what the fuck is going on?
So, lots of electric guitar.
So Def Jam Records was, if you want to put us into perspective, Scott, you're the guy.
You're the
hip hop historian.
Expert on hand.
It was Russell Simmons.
Yep.
Started a small record label out of New York and signed some of the earliest pioneers of rap music.
Like most notably, obviously Run DMC, we talked about a lot.
You mean it wasn't Blair Underwood?
No.
He was playing.
He's the only guy. But
well,
which
now
is,
I'm confused.
Which is
everyone
weird.
Else was playing themselves.
Which is weird, because Rick Rubin plays Rick Rubin. And, like, Russell Simmons was just the only guy that wasn't, like what Sophie said.
Curtis Blow had the sweetest Jerry curl.
So glue.
He was so hard. Like, he was, like, ripping up this movie.
my God. He was
Curtis.
He was,
this movie, like, okay, here's like the fucking.
He was not acting. He was.
So wait, okay, so
what's
the story of this film, John?
It's a story about two brothers finding their way in the world.
I was only really figured out that they were brothers like in maybe the last 20 minutes.
Yeah,
I thought
yeah.
people were just referring to like brothers from the street.
No, no,
like,
no.
He's your brother.
I thought from the start that they were actually brothers.
Absolutely not racist.
No, no, no. So they get they
Wait,
they
are
like
they actually brothers.
Yeah. Wow, Scott, that's pretty racist.
Russell is the brother. Who,
Russell Simmons' brother is with Run.
That's right. So okay. Yeah, you just have to step in and talk okay. over me. So he's like setting up this label, and then he has a whole bunch of his buddies that he signs to them. He doesn't sign. They're all just friends, and they're doing it together.
Right.
And then the big, scary media company comes in and signs them all under his nose. Mm-hmm. And then there's some conflict and some truth. And then they leave the big media company and go back with Russell.
Oh, okay. There's a girl drama.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a love story, too.
You...
That's
completely
what
overlooked, though, the entire Fat Boy story. Sophie, tell us about the Fat Boy
yeah.
storyline that's happening at the same time as that storyline that
yeah.
John is talking
yeah, that's
about.
True.
I'd like to make one thing clear about the Fat Boys is that I don't understand them when they speak.
Because they're
so,
too fat?
No. No, no, not at all. It's just...
If you run into Sophie in the street and you want to talk to her, be skinny. She won't know.
I don't understand what you're saying. You're too fat.
She's just going to nod and smile at you the whole time.
That's fantastic, guys. Anyways, the fat boys are guys in high schools who don't like dissecting fetal pigs for some reason.
Yeah, that was super
awesome.
Gross.
Oh, that was
super
gross. I want to touch on that, too.
Yeah.
That
really freaked me out because they actually had fetal pigs in there for the sake of this movie. Not even for science. For
yep.
entertainment. They had actual fetal pigs. I am offended.
There's a lot.
Way grosser than that. We almost had a Scott vomit moment. Like
the Fat Boys is roasting one of the fetal pigs
as
on
a
spit
over
a
Bunsen,
burner.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the smell of burning formaldehyde. I'm sure people had to die because that was happening.
But like the fucked up part is like, okay, the Fat Boys are fat and they love to eat, but they're like, let's show it this way. Let's show their love for eating that literally if there's anything meat in front of them, they'll just cook it and
let's
eat it.
Let's play the full five-minute song, I Like to Eat.
Yeah.
And that's
all you can eat.
They were a disruptive influence in their class. Anyway, so apparently they're high school boys, and they have dreams of making it big and getting a record deal, and they are called the Disco 3.
Right.
Yeah. And anyways, eventually they figure out they're fat and they call themselves Fat Boys, and you know.
But super weird. That when they were the Disco 3, they said, we're the Fat Boys. When they were the Fat Boys, they're like, they call us Disco 3. And I was like, pick one.
What is going on here?
You have to pick one.
What was Russell Simmons thinking as producer of this movie to make it all about the Fat Boys getting their big break?
Because they're comic relief and everybody loves
the I think Sophie's totally right. They were the comic relief in this movie. Like,
but they were also the protagonists.
Not really.
No,
They're the second story protagonists.
Yeah.
But they were the heroes. They were like the point of view characters.
You know what I think?
That the audience is supposed to be like, I can break in.
When was Purple Rain released? The movie.
Before this.
Yeah.
Because, oh my God, was it nothing but drama and horrible, and somebody threw up like tears of horrible all over that movie. And this was just like, okay, let's take some of the drama with Russell, what's his name, away.
Yeah.
And throw in the Fat Boys, because everybody loves to smile and eat.
Totally.
Yeah.
So you have basically this movie of this... I guess record company that and starts off.
So there's basically two plot lines running through the movie.
I'm just gonna
there's some friction between Run DMC and Russell Simmons about whether
Purple Rain
or not
was 1 year before this film, by the way.
Okay.
Wow.
So 84 to 85. This is what you had to deal with if you were a fan of music. You had to deal with Purple Rain immediately followed by Crush Crew.
Right.
All
right,
so Run DMC is getting an offer from a big record company, and they're torn between staying with their local small people that help them out or signing big. And the Fat Boys are high school kids who are looking to get their first big break.
Yeah,
that's the two. Stars in their eyes.
And there's
donuts.
there's also the Sheila E. Rick, not Rick.
Russell
Sheila E.
Simmons.
Russell Simmons and Run sort of love triangle, but really just Run wanting Sheila E. and Sheila E. having none of it.
So
one of my other. Other favorite part right at the beginning. This movie starts off fucking amazing. Like, if you want to just watch the first 5 minutes of it where it's King of Rock playing and just cutting to fucking random-ass shit, like one of the Fat Boys trying to look up a skirt, getting a Coke poured on his head.
Yeah.
Also, while they're rapping King of Rock, it cuts to Run DMC, who also works at a car wash, with Jam Master Jay presumably working at a car wash.
He's wearing the uniform.
He was wearing the uniform, but he was just... just like DJing at the car wash. I really want to work there. I want to work at the car wash or Run DMC or just fucking rapping and spinning all the fucking time. And then they were like, the old crotchety white guy grabs the record, breaks the record, and they're like, we quit. And then everybody at the car wash also quits. And I feel like not everybody at the car wash had a record deal like Run DMC, so I think 10 of those people were just like, oh, we got really excited when Run DMC quit the car wash, and we also quit. And it's like, you have children. And now you can't feed them, and
also,
you're unemployed.
That guy was pretty right in firing Jam Master Jay.
Maybe not exactly, maybe not the rest of them, but he was. I would absolutely have to, if I went into work and there was a guy who, instead of answering the phones, was just DJing, I'd be like, I have to fire you.
And then the fat boys get kicked out of school for goofing around and then decide
and
to rap.
Roasting a fetal pig.
Roasting a fetal pig and then decide to rap in the halls and start a dance party.
Start a massive
also, I
want to
say, that is the worst teacher ever.
Yes. Yep.
Who she had to smell roasted pork and burning formaldehyde. She
maybe
had to.
She had a good sense of hearing, though, because she always heard the rapping. Exactly. Yeah. The straw in and out of a cup noise. I wanted to get a McDonald's cup with the straw just to be like. So, hang on. Do we want to get this absolutely needs to come up. Like, do we want to get it out of the way right now? The fate of Puff or Buff?
Yeah, we could see.
Yeah, one of the fat boys.
The beatboxing one.
The beatboxing guy, that Buffy,
who has amazing glasses.
Yeah.
His glasses are
rhinestone studded.
Big fucking
in high school.
Yeah, exactly.
So he died at 28 years of age, weighing 450 pounds.
Of a heart attack.
Of a heart attack, while also suffering from the flu and possibly cancer. Dead at 28.
Jesus. That like, is... fucking, so he's 18 in this movie.
Was it cancer flu?
It was cancer flu that gave him a heart attack, pretty much.
Also,
it had nothing to do with his weight.
I feel that a heart attack at a heart attack on a 450-pounder, that there's no way that the weight has nothing to do with it.
Keith,
at
I'm
28.
I'm being funny.
Well, it's a man is dead, Sophie.
I have been put in my place.
I could put John on my back and step on a scale and still not top 450.
Jesus.
That's
true.
Like, that's
fucking crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah. Okay, so... The funniest is that if there was some sort of like crystal ball situation, you see, like Rick Rubin and like Russell Simmons behind the camera, whatever, and then being like, "No, like filming the all you can eat rap song in this movie."
That they
like,
played for five
being like,
fucking
eat
minutes.
More fat boys. Dead 10 years later. Like, they make such a fucking joke of them being fat. They have fucking like a 5-minute sequence of them being disgusting and eating fucking everything. And apparently, the Fat Boys had obviously a single called "All You Can Eat," where they sang about all you can eat.
And then the movie, they go to Sparrow's and eat everything.
Exactly. Yeah. Dead 10 years later.
They get run out of there.
Exactly.
I'd like to make a comment about the fashion. Yeah, I will read to you exactly what I wrote down here.
Okay.
WTF those sweaters. Oh my god, what? Gooby, stop. Naked fur vest, what? The stashes.
Yeah, that guy was awesome.
Yeah.
The stashes.
Yeah.
Individual champagne bottles with straws.
I wrote that too. I wrote little champagne with straws.
Leather,
I wrote.
It wasn't just champagne. It was Moet.
Yeah, exactly. Teeny tiny bottles of Moet with a straw just popped in it. Yeah.
Leather tuxedo with rhinestones. Way to go, Curtis Blow.
Yeah.
That
way
was,
to go, Curtis Blow.
Yeah. No.
For
that was,
for, I wrote because it rhymed, and I thought it was in the spirit of the thing. I wrote fur vest, bare chest.
No, that's totally when. But I didn't want to steal your words.
Based on the fashion alone, I think this movie would play really well at Cinemas Park. Really well. Just the theater repertoire, right in the plateau.
I have a couple other fashion things. One thing you missed was the one-arm poncho.
Yeah, that guy was amazing.
A guy wearing a poncho with one arm, even though there aren't really arm sleeves.
He's like the early sexy sax man.
Oh, my God.
There was another one. Oh, wait. Okay, well, I'll hold on to this one. I'll hold on to this one for just a little later.
I wanted to talk about the mullets.
So many mullets.
And rap music. That is not two things you think of going together, but there were so many rap mullets.
So many mullets and jerry curls and tight perms.
Well, I mean, you got to think about it. Like, in the 80s, metal was the biggest thing, and hip-hop was just emerging in rap music, right? So the mullets got to kind of clash over in the... No? The crossover?
That's pretty much why Aerosmith wanted to work with Run DMC.
Yeah, that makes sense.
To crossover mullets.
I don't know if it was a fashion choice or not, but at the end of the film, the guy who had, like, a square ripped out of the middle of his shirt.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if that was supposed to have had happened naturally in the fight.
Man, I like this shirt, but I want to show my abs. What
exactly.
I know.
I don't know if we were to believe that happened in the fight, that someone ripped a perfect square out of his shirt.
It was like the perfect underboob featuring
if he entered in
like
that.
It was like the hip-hop Power Girl.
Yes, yes.
Okay, what was the name of that group that was all wearing diamond sparkly suits?
New Edition.
New Edition. New Edition.
If you don't know New Edition, they basically were like a young teen boy band from the 80s.
This is what I wrote about. Yeah, it was like boy band Glitter Eternal.
Yeah, they ended up becoming R&B music for all of the 90s.
Oh, my God.
Really? Belle Biv DeVoe was
members of New
Edition.
What about Boyz II Men?
Well, no Boyz II Men without New Edition.
Yeah, Boyz II Men had to be inspired by New Edition.
It's Ralph Tresvant, Johnny Gill, Bobby Brown, and all three members of Belle Biv DeVoe were New Edition.
You googled that.
No, I know that.
Oh, that's my God.
Yeah, it's true. We were all there. He was like did not have his phone in his hand. He was just rattling off those names while he was like, is that New Edition? He just fucking shot in all those
goddamn
names.
Goddamn my prerogative.
Poison. My prerogative.
Yeah, all of them. They were all there together. And,
yeah.
Man.
Wow.
I wanted to comment as well on the makeup, but I don't think people are interested. Basically, there was two makeup artists. There was the guy who did the makeup for everybody, which was really shitty, which is why people looked like oily and dirty throughout the entire thing. And then Sheila E. had her own makeup artist. So she looked decent, you know, a la Diana Ross.
Sheila E.'s wardrobe was also out of control. Like, it
her
was
what?
Just Sheila E.'s just
I
wardrobe
want
in general.
That baby blue lace onesie suit.
Chiffon.
Yeah, I need to wear that on my birthday. Pads.
She was out of control in every possible respect, right? Like, she was like 40% of the screen time of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, but she was like a major character.
In the movie, she gets romantically involved with the Russell Simmons character.
Are we going to talk about this scene?
Who is a real person who then produced the movie.
Right.
Was she actually romantically involved with Russell Simmons?
I have to believe so.
She must have been. So, but
really?
Then,
are Russell Simmons and Run Brothers?
I don't think. I think they meant brothers like in the street.
No, I think the preacher
brothers.
Guy was their dad.
Yeah.
That's why the Russell's dad. I don't think he was Run's dad.
But that's why they had that scene
to show.
Wait, whose house?
I wrote that down. Whose house?
Run's house.
So, okay. Also, here. This film, DMC maybe has like three lines. Like, pretty much in the whole thing, and they're all terribly acted.
Yeah.
But what I did get it from is, like, DMC is just, like, a consummate professional. Like, Run and Russell, like, there's a scene where, first of all, the crowd apparently has paid money to see Run DMC. Headlining the show. Run comes out and is like, hey, everyone's all like, super excited, like, hey, I'm Run, and everyone's like, yay, Run DMC, whatever. He's like, now shut up and listen to this. And then, like, instantaneously, Sheila E. plays Holly Rock.
For five full fucking minutes.
Exactly. And but Run DMC just, like, leaves, and everyone's, like, still super into this thing that they didn't pay for.
Yep.
Then they had backstage, Russell and Run get into, like, a huge fight, and DMC's just out there keeping the crowd warm, getting them clapping, being like, Run! 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 And they're just, like, having a fight backstage, and, like, DMC's like, I have a job to do. It's to keep this crowd hype. Like, we're gonna keep this crowd hype until Run comes out to there.
That guy is the epitome of professionalism.
Exactly. DMC is an consummate professional.
And behind that is because he knows that if any shit goes down, Jam Master Jay
will fucking kill you. That's another scene where they're having auditions for it, and there's just some woman who sings for like fucking almost a whole song.
It was pretty awful.
Who was never in the film for the rest of it.
And was never in it before.
Never in it before, never in it again.
Oh, just that's what I wrote. Random record shooting. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And then LL Cool J comes in with, I don't even think they even say his name. Like, you just have to know it's LL Cool J. LL Cool J comes in and is like, give me a beat. And he's with two guys. One guy just presses play and holds the thing. Another guy does, like,
points.
Gestures to illustrate. Like, puts his hands up, points at LL, points at the people listening, and just stands there in a tracksuit, and it's amazing.
Wait, no, he pointed at the floor once.
He also pointed at the floor. Yeah. But when he comes in, Jam Masters J, because they said auditions are over... So an unannounced audition comes in. Jam Master J's response is to...
Really subtly in the background.
Really subtly in the background.
What the fuck, I said.
Reach
no
for a reach for a fucking gun. There's no more auditions. I'm going to shoot you. LL raps for like fucking a minute. They cut him off. Say you're amazing. And then there's a weird throwaway like voiceover line. You were going to shoot that guy. And everybody laughs. While we're on the topic of the fucking... The where Crush Groove happens. Are we to believe that Rick Rubin lives there?
I think
apparently.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he had that sexy naked man on the
exactly.
poster right over the
bed. And they go and they wake him up and he's there in his little pink underwear.
Yeah.
And of course Rick Rubin is actually played by Rick Rubin. Rick Rubin also bears a shocking resemblance to Grown Up MCA. If you can kind of hear girls in the background right now.
Yeah, really... speaking of that, the Beastie Boys were in this film for like 30 seconds.
I wanted to talk about that.
They were booed.
The best talent show ever in the history of talent shows.
You took notes.
As the talent show is going, and it's a plot line for the Fat Boys in the movie. They were the first prize.
Tin can apple talent show.
The first prize is a reporting contract. So they show up and they have some drama about it, but they finally show up. Also performing at this talent show is New Edition, the Beastie Boys, and the Fat Boys.
Yeah,
like
New York in 1985, man. That's how it goes. Yeah. The Beastie Boys, though, fucking.
Also, why the hell didn't Sheila E. show up? She did not have a recording contract at that point.
It's true. Fair enough. She was just friends with Ren. Beastie Boys are the only people that have the disservice of getting cut off and not getting to perform a fucking full song.
Eminem
and LL Cool J.
Yeah.
Also, maybe they're getting booed?
No, they are getting booed.
No, they're totally getting booed.
But then that weird woo noise came for the Fat Boys, and then I thought maybe it was Arsenio noises.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
No,
I
there was a clear, distinct difference between the two.
Also, Mike D is wearing it.
Exactly. That was what I was holding on to for fashion choices. Mike D wearing a Def Jam jacket. Even though in this world, I guess Def Jam doesn't exist. Like, why couldn't they have just called it Def Jam? They're like, it's all the people from Def Jam, but performing on this fictitious label, Crush Groove.
Maybe they changed it because they didn't want to, like, reveal that it was the actual story, because they were saying stuff about Galaxy in the movie that probably was Columbia or whatever.
Capital MCA or something. World. Maybe. Yeah.
So they were like... Also, they implied that a guy sent goons to beat him up for money for the record loan, and then maybe that would get somebody in trouble. I don't know.
Maybe.
It's fucking weird.
But they clearly identify them as the Fat Boys, Run DMC, Russell Simmons, and Rick Rubin.
But it's Crush Groove Records. Like, now here's... we need to talk more about the Beastie Boys. Because, first of all, the Beastie Boys show up, they don't even perform one of their, like, big songs. And I can kind of imagine, like, at this point, Only Fight for Your Right was probably that big, and the Beastie Boys sort of hated playing it. So I can kind of see, they're like, what other fucking song do they have? So
you Sleep?
Was that out already?
Yeah, that was out before Fight for Your Right.
Fight for Your Right? Okay. Because I don't know. I know Fight for Your Right was their big hit and was not even supposed to be on the album. It was like Rick Rubin who was like, no, put it on. So you have the Beastie Boys who come out and they do their fucking rapping, get cut off for 2 minutes. Yeah. Fucking everybody's booing them, and then they're never in the movie again. They're not even at the Crush Groove
launch party
at the end. Like, even LL's
Did they
there.
Even get credited?
They had to be credited. Yeah. But
maybe they didn't like him. I don't understand.
I have no fucking idea what the fuck was going on with that.
I think it's straight up racism.
Really?
I think they really didn't want a white group in what was going to be a niche market movie.
Maybe.
I don't get it. You broaden the appeal.
Because that's the other thing too, right? It's like this wagon. Really? This film hitches its wagon like heavily to the Fat Boys. Fat Boys are, I think, other than Run DMC. Fat Boys are in it the most of anybody.
Totally.
By like a huge fucking margin. They have multiple songs.
They probably have the most dialogue.
Was that witty wordplay?
Yes.
Okay.
Huge margin.
Yeah.
Because they're all fat guys.
They're called the Fat Boys.
Yeah. And Dead like, this movie is like, to me at least, still like relatively obscure. Like I don't understand, like, it's like not everybody's kind of seen it. Like, when I watch it now, I'm like, how is this movie not sort of everywhere? Because like, just to watch Run DMC in this shittily acted film. If this movie had like, been about the Beastie Boys and the Fat Boys role, like if the Beastie Boys were the kids in high school, like
and the comedic relief,
which they absolutely could be. Like, we've all seen fucking Beastie Boys music videos our whole life. If like the Beastie Boys were the comedic relief and all those scenes and like rapping in the party and like trying to come up, this movie would still be like getting sold at full price at like movie stores.
But you know what?
You'd have like a fucking 20-year edition later and like
Blu-ray.
Yeah, exactly. You'd get a Blu-ray HD remaster of it.
I'm gonna say it's totally racial.
It's straight up racial.
You don't have white guys starring in the next Madea movie, right?
What's
because
Madea?
It's a niche market movie.
The with Tyler Perry.
Who's Tyler Perry?
You're so white.
Metal Bubble. Just say we're gonna say
Metal Bubble.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's such a niche market that Russell Simmons was like, man, we cannot make a rap movie for white fans.
Yeah, but then you have Rick Rubin's in there.
I liked the movie. It was bad. It was badly done.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it. I really did. Like, I would buy this if I saw it for $5 in a store. I totally would. And I would watch it a second time.
But Curtis Blow and the first Run DMC record before Walk This Way and they were not selling to white fans.
Yeah.
They were not like, selling records to white fans. White
because
people
they did
were not.
Want
yeah,
to?
Pretty much every, like, with the exception of Rick Rubin, every white person in this movie is portrayed as like a huge nerd. Basically, yeah. They're all like
the
like,
banker, the evil record executive.
Oh yeah,
teacher.
I wrote that down. What the fuck? Bank rap? I wrote that down. Bank rap. They just break out into a rap while asking for a bank loan.
And
I wrote rap for
spending.
A loan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's rap? Let's explain it. And then
if
Rick Rubin
rap.
Raps.
No, let's Rick, show him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then Rick Rubin just drops some fucking rhymes.
Yeah.
Man, that was so bad.
The other, the best part about that scene, the bank rap, is Rick Rubin's complete refusal to understand. No.
Yeah.
I can't help you with the loan. There's no way we can give it to you. What do you mean by that?
No.
No means no.
But
what's
what
he saying? I was like, wow. Rick Rubin, I don't think you... How did you run a successful record company
when you
can't understand anything?
I want to touch on another theme that was only lightly addressed by us before.
What, okay. Is that the weeping candles and back-licking scene?
No, 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 no. We're saving
bit,
that.
A little
we're
bit.
Saving that.
A little bit.
Are
I
we
want
saving
to,
that?
We have to
it
get
happens.
In depth about that.
All right.
It happens early in the movie.
All right.
And it comes back later on. The spiritual aspect of the
yeah,
movie.
God is testing. I wrote that down. God is testing you. It is God's will
is God's
that you
will.
Start Def Jam Records.
So Russell Simmons goes to his father, who is obviously a preacher of some sort.
Right.
And
Al
asks
Sharpton?
For a loan.
It was the Reverend Al Sharpton.
Yes, it was.
And is refused by his father, saying that it's God's will that he figures this out on his own.
Yeah.
It'll prove that he's a man.
And then later on in the movie, Russell Simmons has a vision of how to save the company.
Does
You're
he?
Right. He has a dream sequence, right?
He has a waking dream sequence.
Yeah.
Like,
oh
he is
God.
Lying there with his eyes open. And
seeing in black and white.
Basically is a holy vision to sign Sheila E. Which, again, is possibly his actual real-life romantic.
Yeah, possible real-life romantic interest. So do you want to talk about Blair Underwood and Sheila E.? That's okay.
The sex scene?
Like, I really want to be, like, single. Just so I can, like, kind of have an on-again, off-again relationship with a girl, show up her house in the middle of the night,
3
a.m. Be like, I need a place to crash, then proceed to light candles and start crying.
Break into her room while she's asleep. Her
yep.
eyes are closed at this
yeah.
point.
Light a bunch of candles, weep openly, and then lick her back.
Yep.
That's
Let's
what the sex
it on,
scene was.
Girl.
Story consultant Russell Simmons.
Yeah.
I was, yeah, that's...
No, no, guys, seriously, this happened. I showed up at 3 a.m., I lit some candles while she was asleep, and then I cried a lot.
He's just, like, watching, and you can just see Simmons, like, on set, like, super fucking intense, being yeah. like, this is how it was.
And this is how it was, and I have to share it with everyone.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, yeah, and then Run walks in.
No, that's
right?
later.
The next morning.
Can you imagine Russell Simmons pulling like, Underwood aside, being like, Blair, I need to talk to you. This is how it happened.
Yeah.
Like, you need to be me. Lick her back.
all the way
lick
up.
Her back all the way.
I like to think it was just a checklist. Like, here you go, Blair. And it says, break into a room. Light candles.
Cry, tears.
Sex.
Do what you want with it.
4 points. Hit those 4 points and you can go wild.
Exactly.
And Blair was like, I'm going to lick her back. All the way down.
That's disturbing.
Russell got like super uncomfortable. Damn.
I also want to say...
Again,
why was Run the only person the whole movie who swears and swears all the time?
Because he's the badass?
No, but I guarantee you it's because they probably couldn't stop him from swearing because they were just bad actors. They were all such terrible actors, and I think that like when he like just got loose, he just swore.
Like, motherfucker! You're like, whoa, whoa!
Whoa! Yeah, yeah, like the first when the first one drops, you're like, it's otherwise looks like it's like a fucking rated G family
totally,
film.
Totally, totally.
Of course, also... In what I almost feel is for sure an ad-lib line, as we discussed, Jam Master Jay reaches for a gun and thinks about killing LL Cool J.
Yeah, that's fucked.
Here's another line. This was so good I had to write it down. Sheila E. calls somebody a koala beanhead.
Yeah, I wrote that down.
In her weird rapping. And then Run keeps making...
You koala beanhead.
What?
And they weren't wearing the Kangol hats yet either.
What does that mean? Well, the catchphrase that I wrote down is when Run leaves in a huff and he says, I'm breaking out. That's
yeah.
my new catchphrase.
And catchphrase is, I'm breaking out.
Yeah.
There's also an impossibly high number of high fives in this movie. I don't know if you guys noticed, but or high fives were like the like bro fives.
Yeah.
Like every time a character meets another character, there's a series of bro fives all
like
the time.
Like a whole series.
Yeah, everybody
every single part of the entourage
must bro five every other part of the other person's entourage, and then they all get together. Just so many fives. Movie is fucking chock full of them.
That's crazy because the high five at that point would only have been about 10 years old.
This is a movie pioneered. So, I was thinking about why they put in fucking 5 minutes.
The
music.
Full song.
Like, I really think that they envisioned, and very likely might have happened, like screenings of this movie being like a fucking party. Like, I think that's sort of what they were going for. It's like people in the movie theater, like literally, like getting up and dancing at this fucking film. I think that, I don't know if it happened,
yeah,
but I think that that's what they were going for.
This was just a gigantic advertisement, like for a bunch of albums.
For the poorly chosen stars of Def Jam.
Yeah.
Like, this movie could have been about LL Cool J, Run DMC, and the Beastie Boys, and you would have been like, yes!
Yeah.
Instead, it was about Run DMC, Curtis Blow, Sheila E., and the Fat Boys.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it was about instead. Like, they had access to those other people, and they were like, nope.
Didn't use them.
Yeah, exactly. It's not going
to
be.
I think it was supposed to be like a concert film.
Yeah, that's like what I'm saying. I think
really?
So, too.
Yeah, like a weird framing for a bunch of music videos.
That's very strange to me. I don't know.
Because they cut off so many songs, and like the ones they chose to play all the way through, holy fuck, we had to listen to Sheila E.'s song there for like
Holly Rock.
Holly Rock for
and
like.
And then again for another
and then
20 seconds.
Again, they played that same song twice.
Yeah. You know, that was a bit hard for me.
This movie was a very much like the Notorious movie, the story of Notorious B.I.G.
Yeah.
A movie for
I never saw it.
No.
Notorious. Is the 9 to 5 movie club going to just be about hip hop movies?
Wait. No, that's not happening because
no,
I
but
already
we can,
know what mine
But we can make it 75% about it without your approval.
Sophie's got to pick an Aerosmith movie, though.
Oh, no.
No.
Pick the Aerosmith movie.
No.
You're going to pick the Metallica movie about
no.
that kid. The
Some
roadie.
Kind of monster?
No, I've already picked a movie. You guys are going to hate it. It's going to be awesome. My favorite thing I wanted to add about the movie is the ending blew me away.
How did the ending blow you away?
Well,
the party?
It was a dance party. So I was very pleased. Everybody got on stage and danced.
Sophie has a stamp of approval for any movie that ends in a dance party.
Like Shrek.
Crush
Cruise.
Which
is also about fat people dancing.
Just like Shrek.
Can we say, we're talking about lines. What was your favorite line?
Koala Beanhead.
Yeah. Koala Beanhead. Yeah. Also in that rap, though, and then what Run keeps making her say is, I got a smile like a little girl.
No, yeah. I got a little girl smile.
I got a little girl smile. Just say it again. Little girl smile.
Say it again.
Now I'm into you.
Okay.
No, but right before that scene, Run is having a very heated discussion with somebody, and he needs 5 pairs of Adidas right now.
Yeah.
Like, right now.
No, not next week. I need them now.
You need 5 pairs of Adidas.
Black and white Adidas.
Black and white Adidas. So, like, conceivably, the same shoes.
And it's not clear at the time, but do you know what he was ordering those shoes for?
No.
It wasn't for him. They were for Sheila E.
What?
He was trying to change their costume before throwing them on stage and ruining Russell Simmons' show.
That's awful.
Yeah.
He was trying to dress them up like Run DMC.
His plan was Sheila E. and her whole entire band.
Dressed
the Sheila
like
E.
Run
Street
DMC.
Band, in my mind.
I just
had to let that wait.
I just flashed back on that crazy legs dancing kid, the one in the gold and purple
tracksuit.
Tat.
I wrote down tat.
Whatever he was, some skinny kid in boofy leather like that. I was a big fan
of the Lakers.
Exactly.
Like candy. Like inflated candy.
Or the LA Kings.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh, it was awful.
I doubt it. I feel it was probably the Lakers. But either way, yeah. So, yeah, his plan, I guess, was to get tracksuits and Adidas and have them up there performing their weird little disco groove dressed up like Run DMC. And his crazy demand. We talked about this, too. Sophie thought that the film was possibly sponsored by Adidas.
Yeah.
When it totally was not. And that was, like, a point of contention.
It's fucking everywhere. The logos, the suits, they're talking about it.
They had a song called Rock Your Adidas. That was about rocking
and
your Adidas.
And they were not paid by Adidas?
They were absolutely not.
That's like an unhealthy obsession.
Yeah.
That's a thing that happens through rap music, though. Like,
they get obsessed?
N.W.A.
With labels?
N.W.A. got threatened by
the city
owner
of Compton?
The owner of the L.A. Raiders.
Yeah.
Like saying, please do not wear...
Oakland Raiders?
L.A. Raiders at the time.
Oh, okay.
Now they're in Oakland.
Okay. Well, yeah, but I'm just saying that... Yeah.
Yeah. Just saying, like, please stop wearing it. You're tarnishing... And this is, like, as Black and Silver is taking over the sales, right? Yeah. Everyone was wearing the Raiders for no reason whatsoever.
Well,
other than
NWA. NWA was wearing Raiders gear. That was the reason.
That's crazy. And they were like, please stop this. This is not, we do not want anything to do with you.
That is fucking crazy.
Well, the same thing.
Money.
The same thing fucking happened with Tommy Hilfiger, right?
Oh, yeah, except really racist.
Yeah,
no, but
kidding.
That's it. But it was like Tommy Hilfiger was making like massive amounts of sales in like street culture and whatever else like that. And then Tommy Hilfiger was like, I don't want black people wearing my clothes. And now he's not a designer
anymore. Well, that's how
like,
FUBU.
Like, basically.
That's how FUBU got launched. Yeah, like for us, by us.
Yeah,
it's a little like fuck you, Tommy.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But yeah, but that's it. Like there has been like a long standing history of
Jay-Z with the Yankees cap.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure that by then though, the companies were
they had wised up to the
situation.
Steinbrenner was not saying no, please don't do this, Jay-Z. But like, there are not that many people who are fans of the Yankees.
Yeah,
there are many more Yankees caps out there just because of its association.
Speaking of Jay-Z. The big badass in this movie, the guy who has all the money, is JB. Is it a coincidence?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, at the time, like...
No, I know, but I mean, Jay-Z didn't exist in 1985.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's just, Jay-Z watched this movie. JB, I like that. Jay-Z.
I also really want to look at whether or not that was Chris Rock in the background.
Okay.
You pretty much have to tweet him.
Yeah.
We have to try to discuss it.
Were you in Crush Groove?
Were you in Crush Groove, Chris Rock? Everybody, all four of us need to tweet him right now. Okay. Were you in Crush Groove? And it's possible, too, because Chris Rock did comedy acts before, like, the Def Jam stuff. Like, that was, like, a thing that happened in New York City was Chris Rock.
Like 16 in there.
Yeah, which should be about right.
Yeah, totally.
Like, it's completely right.
There's totally space for a sequel. Like, because this story goes on. There's so many different rap groups.
But you can't have
the same group doing it.
No.
Like acting themselves anymore. Right?
Well, Jam Master Jay is dead.
Yeah,
MCA is dead.
Wait, how did Master
Jay die? So
where's
Buffy?
Jam Master Jay died a long time ago. He died the same year as Joe Strummer. And he died of...
What?
Oh my God.
What's wrong with you guys? Why do you always look at me like this?
Just say Metal Bubber.
Okay.
Metal Bubber.
Yes. Metal Bubber.
Joe Strummer is the lead singer of The Clash.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. That's why. That evoked a what?
I am not into punk. I'm sorry.
No.
Whatever.
I was a little disappointed, no lie. Yeah. As we said before, that Slayer was on Def Jam and not in this film.
Yeah.
Would have been a very weird interlude.
Again, I'm just going to say it's racial.
Ruben is like, I got this new act. I want you to check it out, Russell. I know you're really into this hip-hop thing. Then Rain of Blood starts playing.
You guys
playing.
Like guitars, right?
Yep.
And it would be like this weird 5 minutes of the movie where everybody would like go and get popcorn or something. It's the weird Slayer 5 minutes. Theater just empties out. It'd be awesome.
I would, I'd see that.
So Sophie actually liked this movie. I think that's a...
We're supposed to watch like horrible films here. And
I
was entertained.
Film.
This was a very, very bad film.
Yeah,
it was an entertaining bad film.
It belongs in my awesome bad movie folder. It really
awesome.
Does.
I had too many moments where it was like, I'm just not entertained by this, and it's stupid.
And I think
they were all about the Fat Boys, those moments.
Yeah.
If you were a Fat Boy fan, though.
Probably I'd be into it.
Exactly.
Apparently I am.
Sophie doesn't hate rap. She just needed to be exposed to more of it.
Yes, that's with food. There you go. I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then I think that all of the moments in the film where I, like, disconnected from it were the... full commitment to full songs.
Yeah.
Like that.
Very
that
much,
but, which,
very
though, if it was 1985 and I was like into this music, which conceivably I was if I was going to pay like real money to go see Crush Groove in 1985, I'd be like excited. Like, yeah. Like I thought that the whole, like playing the entirety of King of Rock at the beginning made me like,
yeah. Yeah, but that could have worked as an intro sequence. You know, you can get away with one full song at the start of a movie.
I also came across another note about fashion, guys. When they go to the weird disco club and there's a money dress lady.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
To the
she
back.
Was wearing
and it's a terrible money dress.
Yeah, it's
just
like
flopping. There's like 10 bills on it.
Yeah, there's like 10 bills just like stapled to her dress and she's dancing around in the background.
What?
I'm sorry you missed that, Sophie.
I'm sorry I missed that. I was like so wowed by the fashion. The glitter and glamour.
Exactly. Those 5 minute long music.
Gender bending. There was a lot of gender bent fashion.
Yeah, there was.
There.
But pretty much all of Sheely's band was.
Oh, the shoulder pads.
Who knows what the fuck. Yeah.
There was that guy with the shiny pants and the blouse. Like, just, wow. Playing tambourine.
Oh, yeah, with the mustache and the glasses and that streak in his hair, the big stripe. It was like skunk hair. That was awful.
So I'm trying to see if I can track down the box office take for Crush Groove. See how well this...
is on Box Office Mojo? Or
yeah, I'm checking.
Sophie.
Yes.
Just I have a quick question for you.
Okay.
Can you explain to me the difference, if you are able to, after watching Crush Groove, between illing and fronting?
Okay. Illing is when you're disrespecting your close friends or family, right?
Now explain fronting.
Fronting means backing somebody up?
No.
I don't know what fronting is.
John, illing and fronting.
I'm not playing this game.
But it's fun.
I'm looking up Box Office Mojo.
Scott, illing and fronting?
Fronting would be looking out for your own personal interest, trying to puff yourself up, make yourself sound like you're more than you are. Illin would be the opposite, trying to tear someone else down.
I see.
Being rude, being disrespectful.
Right,
exactly.
Okay.
So that's why Run says, with such conviction, I'm not illin, I'm frontin'. So he's not trying to take down Russell Simmons, he's just trying to build up Run.
Can we, in a podcast, do that star thing with the letters that say, the more you know?
The more you know. Now you know the definition of illin and frontin'. Now here's the crazy part, is as we're listening to the Beastie Boys' debut album right now, Licensed to Ill.
Yeah.
Like, they were all about illing, apparently. Like, because they had License to Ill, Ill Communications. Yeah. They had, like, there was another one, too.
Paul's Boutique.
And
totally about illing.
No, but there's another... They talk about illing in a lot of their songs. So I was like, wow, they're really about tearing everybody down.
Maybe that's why they got...
But they're not, because if you listen to the lyrics, they're all about fronting.
Maybe they got... That's why they got booed so much when they went on at that...
Because they were so much... They were so ill. They also say deaf, I feel, more than people did. They were like,
man,
that's deaf. You know that's deaf. You know I'm deaf right now. And I was like, damn, Def Jam. You're saying
this. This was actually a profitable film. It appears that it was made for about $3 million.
What?
And it took in 11. So $8 million profit.
That's not nothing.
Plus, they made a Crush Groove, the album. Which
yeah, because there's the single at the end that they're singing like, Crush Groove.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that was had to be a song for the movie.
Presumably there was album sales associated with this that are not recorded in the box office. Well,
presumably also there was like additional album sales to like just the Fat Boys record
and
Sheila E. record and Curtis Blow's record.
So pretty solid investment for Def Jam.
Totally, totally.
Yeah, $3 million, make $8 million.
And
fucking,
sell a bunch of
and
records.
Simultaneously
bunch of records.
Make people watch a fucking commercial for all your music.
Yep.
Fucking, let's do that. Here's another thing.
Let's do that. None of us are musicians.
Let's do that. Let's all release albums and then make a movie about how we got together and released albums.
Yeah, that's true, eh?
It's going to be the best.
Wait, aren't we doing that but with a comic?
Sort of.
We don't make any money.
We don't make any money from that. We need to make...
We need to make a movie about that.
And also, this is something I've thought about before this movie, but again, this movie just made me think about it more. Was that as a name for an act... Run DMC is weird. Because it'd be like, hey, what's... Like, if John and I were make a band, what's the name of the band?
Keith John.
Yeah.
You know? It's just like... It's not Run and DMC. It's
Run DMC.
DMC.
Also, I'm playing all the music. I'm like, what the fuck?
Shut up,
I'm
Jam
Scott.
Master Jay. Jam Master Scott. Yeah, you just don't get to be involved in it. They're like, the name of the band is the two guys in the band. There's only three people. Can you throw in a third name? No.
Like, that's rude.
It is.
Also,
that's
also it's super weird because at the time... DJs were the ones who played the music.
Yeah.
So, like, it's DJ Jazzy Jeff.
And the Fresh
Prince.
Yeah.
It's not the other way around.
Yeah.
You know
Jam
what?
Jam Master Jay is just like, oh.
Run DMC.
Yeah,
Jam
there was
Master
no DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
They weren't on Def Jam.
Yeah, right.
That's Boys. West Coast. West Coast. Well, no, Philadelphia, but not New York.
Boys,
no, but
what?
they did beef very much with LL Cool J.
Yeah.
LL Cool J and Jazzy Jeff did not like each other.
Really?
Yeah.
Aw. I like to think everyone gets along.
No, not those
wow.
two.
Sophie,
you don't know anything about rap music.
Sophie, I have to break some real hard truths to you about the hip-hop music. Not everybody gets
Man,
along.
We totally have to watch Notorious now.
God damn it, guys. Okay, so what lessons did we take away from this film?
I took away the lesson that skinny Jewish kids are funnier than fat kids.
What?
I found, personally, the music videos of just even Fight for Your Right to Party to be better comic relief than the Fat Boys in this film.
Okay, I took away the lesson white people are never cool.
That's true.
Yep.
What about Rick Rubin?
That's what the 90s taught me.
He was even the least cool of them.
And he also had some comic relief.
Yeah,
like the pink underwear
did.
Had to be there as
totally.
Comedy relief.
Yeah, seriously.
Do you know what his DJ name was?
He was a DJ.
DJ Rick Rubin?
No, it was DJ Double R.
That's so original.
Right? His also name is not Rick.
When
he's
someone
like
tells
Frederick.
You it's God's will to figure it out, go to a loan shark.
Yes. Totally.
It's God's will that you make this happen.
I will do it by committing crime.
I learned that there's a lot of famous people I don't know exist.
Wow.
Yep.
And this was a momentous occasion.
That's pretty much all I learned.
I learned that there is no greater threat than next time we will rip your shit all the way off.
Yeah, that was pretty epic.
Why would Russell Simmons want that shown?
Yeah, exactly. No,
man, they threatened me so bad, they grabbed my junk.
I'll rip your shit off all the way.
So what does he do? Runs to a chick. Make me feel better.
Light some candles, cries. So this was like way less painful than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I was expecting something horrendous.
Well,
I just saw Samurai Cop, so yeah. My threshold is like, way
off. Oh my god,
off.
Where? I need to see that. Where is it? Can you download it somewhere?
Yeah.
From YouTube.
From I think almost the whole entire film is
like
on 100 YouTube.
Places to catch
oh
it.
Oh my god, I'm watching that tonight.
I have it on my hard drive, like right now. So does Keith.
John might. No, John doesn't have it.
John I need could, to watch
though.
It.
John could.
Yeah.
Okay. So, John, would you recommend Crush Groove?
No.
And if so, to whom?
I would not recommend Crush
to
Groove.
To anybody?
I don't think I would recommend it to anybody. I think if you're into like this era of rap music, you've probably already heard of and or seen this film. So I don't think that there's... It was like amusing, I guess, but it's not like the characters... Whatever.
There weren't even characters. There's just Run DMC.
There wasn't even enough funny moments to like make it funny on its own. It was just like, what the fuck?
Scott?
I would totally recommend this movie to Keith. If I had seen this movie first, I'd be like, Keith,
you have to see this movie.
You have to see this movie because no one else will be interested in it.
No one else will give a fuck. Yeah, I really want you to make your wife watch Crush Groove. I can put it on your hard drive. Baby, watch this movie. It was really good. She'd just be like, what the fuck is this guy? Sophie said she'd buy it for $5.
I would.
I'd buy that for
$1. If I saw it in a store, I would buy it for $5. While I went shopping for something else and accidentally saw it kind of thing.
Exactly, like if you were in the bargain movie bin or whatever.
Yeah.
I hope the guy who did, like, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, the movie poster, did the movie poster for this. Like, really epic pencil drawing. It'd be awesome.
Like, I would play this in a screen in the background during, like, a party or something.
That wouldn't be so bad. Like, there are some people that like...
But that's not the same as recommending that somebody sit down and take an hour and a half of their day to watch.
It's
but
good for nostalgia, and it's good if you just like to watch people having fun or crying by candlelight. So, you know.
I'm kind of surprised this movie didn't have some sort of a resurgence, though. Like, I feel like hipsters would be all about
this.
Well,
it might now.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, watching, like, fucking actual, like, 80s musicians... terribly acting in a movie about themselves. Like, there seems to be, like, some sort of an ironic hipster appeal of the clothing.
This is like the African-American equivalent of Gleaming the Cube.
What are you saying? These words don't go together. That's not a sentence.
Gleaming the Cube? Explain.
Yeah, the Tony Hawk skateboard movie.
Yeah!
Like...
Where they lie on their back and practice moves in their shorts.
No, that's, The Search for...
The other
racist
one.
Racist Asian name.
What?
Oh, yeah, like the Search for How Wing or something?
Something like that.
Low Wang?
Something like that.
That's the Bones Brigade movie.
Yeah.
No, Gleaming the Cube was like...
The one after that.
The Hollywood movie that was about skateboarding that Tony Hawk was the skateboarder for.
Coming up next on 9 to 5 Movie Club, Gleaming the Cube.
So do we...
No.
Do we know? Do we know who's next? Who's next?
Sophie's next.
I was nominated, and should I announce which movie I'm making you guys watch?
Do it. We don't know when these are going to be probably released very interspersed. No lie, these 9 to 5 movie clubs are going to be released when we can't get together.
Nobody
to record
be interested.
90F.
If people do listen and they want to go get this film, they can watch it and then listen to our opinions and match it with their own.
And what
own.
Is the movie?
It is Asian Cinema's Naked Weapon.
I think I've seen it.
Huh?
I think I've seen it.
I may have made you watch it.
Yeah.
I have no idea what it is.
I have not seen it. Do you want to give us a brief, like a soupçon?
Female Assassins?
Electra, got it.
Yep.
So this was the 9 to 5 Movie Club, guys.
Yay.
Crush Groove.
Crush Groove edition.
Nine to 5.cc. We're not working. Why should you? Thanks for listening.